This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday in this hour, and we certainly appreciate him spending time with us to talk about really critically important issues that we face in the city, and today's no different. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Newell.
So, Rafi, I happened to interview Ed Michel earlier, the Inspector General of the City of New Orleans, and we talked about the 2024 report, which was pretty compelling, over 700% return on investment as it relates to a number of investigations that were conducted by his office. He had a good year, and when he has a good year, we as citizens have a good year. He was reappointed Monday night. And I understand that that whole situation was a little difficult. Tell us about it.
Right. So I went to the hearing. In fact, he was scheduled to have been considered by the board for reappointment in February, but it got continued or postponed back until March. So normally, at the beginning of the fourth year of service for an inspector general, the appointing authority, which for the inspector general is the Ethics Review Board, they normally make a decision at the beginning of the final year of the four-year contract to decide whether to conduct a national search or to reappoint the existing inspector general. They opt to conduct a national search. It's basically a vote of no confidence for the inspector general, which means that there'll probably be a changing of the guards. So Ed Michel, came into New Orleans, came back to New Orleans. He's a New Orleans native, but he retired from the FBI specifically to come back to the city of New Orleans. When he retired from the FBI, he took a cut in pay to come work for the Inspector General's office. He came back to the Inspector General's office as the chief of the investigative division. He was hired by his predecessor, Derry Harper, who was the Inspector General at the time. And shortly after Ed came back, he came to the conclusion that the office was so dysfunctional that it was incapable of fulfilling its mission to expose and suppress fraud, waste, and abuse. So during the Ethics Review Board, which is the appointing authority, conducted an investigation into Derry Harper's administration, and he elected to retire in lieu of the board moving forward with disciplinary sanctions against him. So Ed was appointed the interim while there was the national search. He applied for the position, and as I said, the office was in disarray and was dysfunctional. There were morale and productivity issues, meaning that morale was as low as it could possibly be, and productivity was non-existent. In fact, been reported to me that his predecessor, Derry Harper, asked about productivity, responded that the productivity of the Inspector General's office was not a priority for him. So when Ed came in there, his mission was to turn the organization around, make it capable of fulfilling its mission of exposing and suppressing fraud, waste, and abuse. So when he came in, the Inspector General's office in 2019 and 2020 had produced 6 reports. Ed was appointed the Inspector General in 2021. So it went from 6 reports to 12 reports, and this year, 16 reports. Now, to do that, you know, keep in mind, the staff was, the office was staffed at less than 50% of the funding that was allotted for employees. So people had left the office under the prior administration, and because they were so few staff members, they couldn't do their jobs. Those positions had never been filled. Quickly went about filling those positions, and in filling those positions, he also demanded that the existing employees, a few of which decided that they were used to not having to work for a living, didn't necessarily appreciate the change in culture that Ed was introducing to the Inspector General's office. One of them was dismissed, and a few other elected to leave voluntarily. And after one of the individuals that left the office decided that he would file a complaint against the Inspector General with the appointing authority, which is the Ethics Review Board. The Ethics Review Board spent over a year investigating those allegations. They hired outside counsel to conduct a thorough investigation. They reviewed the allegations against Mr. Michel and the office. The investigative entity that was hired, a law firm, interviewed several of the employees as well as some of the past employees and presented their findings to the Ethics Review Board, and they found that there was no merit to the allegations. So on Monday, the board conducted a hearing in which the public was allowed to come express their opinions about the merits of reappointing Ed Michel for a second 4-year term. So Ed was allowed to give some initial comments to the board outlining the accomplishments during his tenure. And, you know, he pointed out that during the 3 years, because this is the beginning of his fourth year, up to 3 years, they generated 50 public reports, audits, evaluations, and investigations. And he presented his findings to the board, and then the public was allowed to comment. And I commented, a few other private citizens commented, but the most compelling testimony that was offered to the board was by 10 of his employees that attended the meeting to talk about what Ed Michel meant to them and to that office. You had the chief of audits come in and discuss how Mr. Michel had restored order to the office and talked about some of the chaos that existed in that office prior to his arrival, where you had the prior Inspector General, Derry Harper, allegedly routinely failing to come to work, very rarely came to work. And the office's morale and productivity was very low. This employee laid it all out for the board. Several other employees spoke about how Ed Michel prioritized the family life of their employees and exhibited understanding during the COVID crisis, and allowed some of the employees to deal with family issues during that. So one after another, and these are civil service employees, Ed Michel cannot compel anybody to come to testify for him. If he does, it's a violation of city law. So they came there voluntarily because they care about that office. And the fact that under his leadership, under his guidance, that office has made a miraculous turnaround in 3 years. And the thing that impressed me about the employees was very touching and enlightening, but there were some people that spoke out against Mr. Michel's reappointment. And they were citing some of the allegations of the disgruntled employee that had filed a written complaint with the board. Now, these citizens that were opposing his reappointment, I don't know if they were aware that the board had reviewed those allegations, had hired a firm, spent a year investigating them, and concluded that there was no merit to those allegations, but they were rehashing those same allegations that had presented to the board over a year before. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, the disgruntled employee that made these allegations did not appear to testify before the board in this. In fact, nobody that had any firsthand knowledge of any bias or prejudice or wrongdoing in that office appeared and testified. And none of the people that testified in opposition of the reappointment of Mr. Michel, no one questioned the findings of any of the reports that had been issued by the Inspector General's office during his tenure. So in addition to the audits and evaluations, the Inspector General's office conducts criminal investigations. And just during 2024, there were a number of significant investigations that included the state indictment of the former Orleans Parish Communications District Director, Terrell Morris, on state fraud and malfeasance charges. Mr. Morris made the news last week when he announced his candidacy for mayor. So he's running for mayor while under indictment on state malfeasance and fraud charges. That was an investigation conducted by the Inspector General's office. Other significant criminal investigations conducted by that office included former Sewage and Water Board senior special agent that was accused of using a position in multiple fraud schemes. She's under indictment as we speak. Third-party inspector Randy Farrell, who was conducting electrical inspections, is now under federal indictment on 25 counts of fraud, conspiracy, and also allegedly for bribing Public Official 1. That is allegedly the mayor of the city of New Orleans. And then the Inspector General's office played a role in developing some of the evidence that resulted in the arrest and successful prosecution of former NOPD bomb squad leader, Sergeant Todd Morrell. So those are some of the criminal investigations. And basically, Nothing was happening before Ed arrived. Some of Ed's predecessors, like Ed Quattrovo, had that office up and running, but it had fallen into a state of dysfunctionality. And Ed, in 3 years, turned that organization around. And on Monday, the board recognized his accomplishments, and they unanimously voted to offer him and extend him for a second 4-year term as Inspector General. I think it's well deserved. And I think, and I agree with you, that that office is critically important to the prosperity of the city of New Orleans. Without the Inspector General's office, I think the public suffers. Because of the Inspector General's office, there's greater accountability, there's greater transparency, and I think that that office is fulfilling its obligation. And the Crime Commission, as well as several other people, post-Katrina, advocated for the creation of that office. We had a vision that it could do what it's doing now under Ed Michel's tenure, and I think that justice was served with him being reappointed, and I think that that will benefit the city over the next 4 years, having that office maintain continuity and productivity.
I also applaud the ethics board or commission, whatever they call themselves, because I'd heard a number of rumors of people trying to influence the way that vote was going to go. They did the right thing.
Right. I can't prove any of that, but I've heard the same rumors that you heard, that there was pressure. So that board is normally a 7-person board. 2 members resigned, meaning that there was only 5 board members there, and 4 of them had to agree to extend Mr. Michel's tenure for a second term, and all 5 of them voted to. I don't know why the other 2 people left, but I heard the same rumors, but all 5 of those board members stood firm. And one of the board members commented that her decision was, and the board is entirely female, but her decision was based on the productivity of that office. The board member was looking at the work product generated by the Inspector General's office over the past 3 years, and none of the allegations of misconduct, even though they were thoroughly vetted and investigated, were found to have any merit. So this board member's public comments at the hearing prior to the vote was that she was impressed with the, and her decision was based on the productivity and effectiveness of the Inspector General's office during the first 3 years of Ed Michel's tenure.
And Rafi, there weren't any of the formerly accused individuals that were the subject of these investigations that went before the board and testified that they felt like that they were treated unfairly or disagreed with
nope.
the outcome?
No. Now, keep in mind,
in fact,
that,
a lot of these folks ended up pleading guilty, right, and to some of these allegations that they were charged with and admitted to some of these things, even if there wasn't a criminal sanction.
Right. So, the Inspector General's office issued a report on the Juvenile Justice Intervention Center Executive Director, Keyshawn Webster. And Keyshawn Webster's report, and Mr. Michel and that office, their protocol is when they issue a report, they give it to the affected entity or individual, and they have the opportunity to respond to it. And that's what they did. And Mr. Webster elected to resign his position with the city of New Orleans. And after he resigned his position, he filed suit against the Inspector General's office. And that case was summarily dismissed. The Inspector General's office issued a report pointing out that the mayor's use of the Pontabla apartment was not necessary, and recommended that apartment be put back into commerce and put back on the rental rolls. And that was the basis of the city council passing an ordinance in 2023, stripping the mayor of her apartment after she violated the conditions imposed by the council. So yep. By the nature of what the Inspector General's office does, if they're productive, and he issued 16 reports and went from six reports to over a dozen reports in year one. So the more work that you put out, the more enemies that office is going to generate, because they're not taking on low-profile issues. They're taking on department heads, the Orleans Communication District, the JJIC, the mayor of the city of New Orleans, the Sewage and Water Board, safety and permits. Those are all major entities. And no one appreciates being told that they're not doing their job properly. Some people lose their jobs because of these reports. So by the very nature of a productive IG's office, you're going to make enemies. He made enemies, but the board saw through that and reappointed him for a second four-year term.
Thankfully. All right, when we come back after the break, speaking of Mayor Cantrell, seems as though she may have doubled down, is off on her travels yet again, much to the chagrin of the city council, and we'll talk about that when we return. Stay with us.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So at some point in time, the mayor says the city's broke, can't honor a deal that the council and members of her staff actually had confected with the school board. It's now in litigation. And during that course, the council decided, well, if we're broke, then travel's out. But she didn't get the message. I guess maybe she thinks that she was not part of that meeting, Rafi. I don't know what the situation is, or she just doesn't care. So what's going on?
Right. Well, that's the highlight. But, you know, now that the Super Bowl and Mardi Gras are over, the mayor's returning to one of her favorite pastimes, and that's travel. So you just frame the issue. The council voted to restrict not just her travel, but the travel of all city employees, because the mayor had reneged on an agreement to pay the school board $20 million, a down payment on $20 million of funds that the city owed the school board. They collected the funds, but they hadn't remitted them to the school board. So this is decades of underpayment of funds that were due to the school system, and the mayor and the city of New Orleans agreed to do it, and at the last minute, the mayor reneged on that deal, and the council said, wait, if we're broke, then we don't have the money to travel. And make no mistakes about it. That ordinance that was passed, that wasn't intended to impact anybody but the mayor, because the council now knows that, you know, this mayor has an insatiable appetite for travel and leisure, and that ordinance was passed, in my opinion, as a direct message to the mayor. If you're not going to honor the commitment that the city of New Orleans and you made to the school system, then there's going to be a consequence, and that was the consequence that this council imposed. But they're the legislative branch of the government. They have the authority to do that. The mayor is supposed to abide by the laws of the city of New Orleans, and she is thumbing her nose at the laws of the city of New Orleans. But, you know, that should come as no surprise to anybody, because, you know, we need to remember that this mayor does what she wants, and it is not a consideration for her what's in the best interest of the city. It's what best suits her. And, you know, previously we spoke about the fact that the mayor was photographed by Ann Brough sitting on the balcony of the Tableau restaurant eating a meal with her security guard, Officer Jeffrey Vappi. And Ann Brough took a picture of her, and the mayor saw her take the picture. The mayor knows who Ann Brough is. And the mayor, in an attempt to retaliate against Ann Brough, went into civil court and sought a restraining order alleging that Ann Brough was stalking her. And after the judge heard the facts, the judge dismissed the mayor's claim and awarded attorney's costs to Ann Brough for having to defend this frivolous lawsuit that was filed by the mayor, this protective order that was sought by the mayor. And now the city of New Orleans is defending the mayor for what she did as a private citizen in federal court, because Ann Brough is alleging that her constitutional rights were violated by the city of New Orleans. The mayor doesn't care about that. The mayor wanted to send a message that if anyone bothered to dared to take her photograph in public, there was going to be a consequence. But it backfired, and the consequence is on the people of the city of New Orleans that are now footing that bill. And just as the council expressed their frustration with the mayor failing to abide by the agreement that the city and the mayor had agreed to make an initial installment of $20 million payment to the school system, only to say that the city was broke. That's why that ordinance was passed. But what we're seeing is that, you know, the mayor has, by everything that she's done, you know, during her term of office, is her official duties are secondary to what her personal desires are. And don't get in the way of what she believes she's entitled to, like the Pontabla apartment or her ability to travel. And the council basically had to restrict her travel, just as they ultimately stripped her of the use of the Pontabla apartment. And even after they ordered that the council ordered that the apartment be put back into commerce, the mayor refused to move out. And they had to threaten her with eviction before she ultimately moved out of that apartment. So, you know, now what we're seeing is the mayor, you know, refusing to comply with another city ordinance. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, we're looking at the mayor traveling to exotic locations like South Korea, Kenya, Dubai, Qatar, Paris, France, Barcelona, Spain, Montreal, Canada, Mexico City, Nantucket, Massachusetts, Los Angeles, California, San Diego, Miami, Vegas, and five trips to Washington, D.C. So what the mayor has done, keep in mind that a couple of years ago, the city council had to force the mayor to reimburse the city for first-class travel that she took. You know, when public officials and city employees travel, they're not allowed to fly first class. The mayor believed that she was entitled to fly first class. And the city council impressed the administration on the law. The mayor acquiesced and agreed to repay the city $30,000 for first-class travel. But the mayor found a workaround for that. So what she's been doing now when she travels to many of these conferences, and in November of last year, she traveled in the same month to Barcelona, Spain for one conference, and Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, for another conference. The cost of those trips were $79,000, almost $80,000. So the mayor has obtained scholarships by the entities that are sponsoring those conferences to pay for her transportation and lodging. So when she went to Barcelona, Spain, her airfare was $11,725. She didn't go alone. She brought a staff member and a member of her executive protection team. So her airfare was $11,700. The two people that she brought with her's airfare was a little over $4,000 each. So the $11,000 airfare suggests that the conference paid for the mayor to fly first class. But the lodging for the mayor for the conference was $5,400. Her security and staff member that went, their lodging was $2,200. So obviously the accommodations of the mayor were double what the other two members of that accompanied her would suggest, that she's in a much nicer room. So that allowed her to basically travel to Spain and do it first class, literally. But the city is also paying her per diem and paying for people that go with her for their per diem as well. That's coming out of the taxpayers' money. Many of those conferences, they provide you with meals in those. You know, certainly breakfast and lunch, and oftentimes at least there's one dinner. But each person that goes gets between $90 and $110 per day in per diem. Those meals are being paid for. That's basically profit that the mayor can put into her pocket in all of this. And that's being paid for by city taxpayer dollars. That's not scholarships that she's receiving for free travel. So anytime that she goes to these conferences, she has to fill out the paperwork. She has staff members that do that. When security goes on these trips with her, they're being paid overtime while they're accompanying her on these trips that she's not supposed to be taking at this point in time. So we don't know yet how much the trip to Washington, D.C. cost. But if you take a look at, even if the argument is that someone else is paying for the flight and the lodging, it doesn't cover the cost of per diem that the mayor is still receiving from the city of New Orleans, not to mention the entourage that goes with her, whether it's security and or staff members. So on the trip to Rio de Janeiro in November of last year, she was accompanied by three staff members. And, you know, those costs add up. In a city that can't afford to make honor a settlement agreement with the school system, they don't have the funds to pay for education for our children, the children of this city. But we have the money to bring the mayor and her staff on some of these unnecessary trips. That's what is, I think, frustrating the public and what frustrates the city council. When they look at this, this is not the type of leadership that I think anybody expects from the mayor of the city of New Orleans, but this is what we've come to expect during her now seven and a beginning of her eighth year in office. So
they ought to look at a way to deduct it from her paycheck. She's making about $700 to $800 a day, and if she's going in violation of the law and she continues to spend these monies, just deduct it from her paycheck. They ought to pass an ordinance that that's what they're going to do. And
well,
you know, she can travel all over the place, and they just keep deducting it. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. More than one way to skin a cat.
There you go.
I mean, you want to play these silly ass games? We'll play. Tee it up.
Yep.
I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Not to mention that she was missing work one in five work days she missed. That's 20%. So 20% of the time she's missing. So the 52 days a year she's out of town, or she's not here. You know.
And there's a real cost, even if some of her cost of travel and lodging are deferred by the entity.
Sure.
You're still looking at all of the resources of the city that go into arranging for her trip and accompanying her on that trip that aren't necessarily covered by the conference that is offering her a scholarship.
It's an unlawful expenditure. You know, if you have to go to court, get a judgment against her, garnish her wages. Forget about it. Move on. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, we're going to be going to the ballot box on March 29th. A number of constitutional amendments. Early voting starts Saturday, March the 15th, to the following Saturday. And amendment number 3 is one of that we should be paying attention to, and it presents as follows. Do you support an amendment to provide the legislature the authority to determine which felony crimes, when committed by a person under the age of 17, may be transferred for criminal prosecution as an adult? Rafi, your thoughts.
Right. So amendment number 3 lists 16 different crimes of violence that prosecutors can transfer juveniles, which would mean 15 and 16-year-olds, to adult court. So this list right here has to be approved by the legislature. Two-thirds of the legislature have to approve this list to add or delete any of those offenses to that. And then there has to be a constitutional amendment vote by the public. So what amendment number 3 does, it streamlines the process. Means that if a prosecutor wants to add an offense to this list, then you still require a two-thirds vote of the legislature, but you don't have to go out to a vote of the public. So in looking at these 16 offenses, you've got crimes like first-degree, second-degree murder, manslaughter, armed robbery. It doesn't include attempt. So if someone attempts to murder someone or an attempted armed robbery, because attempt isn't listed on this, we have to go through the process of a constitutional amendment every time you want to change this. So what's being proposed is just streamline this process. And since we're changing the Constitution, the public has to vote on this streamlined process. So a vote yes for the Amendment 3 means that the public is trusting the legislature to amend the list of offenses. And they're all gonna, they're always going to be crimes of violence that they're dealing with here. So this is, I think, a commonsensical approach to make it less cumbersome and burdensome for the legislature to respond to shifts in crime patterns, and all of that will be supported by facts presented by prosecutors and investigators to the legislature. The public just won't have to ratify every one of these that may be changed in the future.
Absolutely. Get out and vote, folks. These are important issues. Early voting starts Saturday. The election is on March 29th, which is a Saturday as well. As always, Raphael, going at you, we appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
We will be right back. Check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way. Stay with us. Scoot's up next, and he joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we're going to talk about this bloodworm moon. And I love these weird names that they have for moons. And I think sometimes these, you know, astronomers just maybe have too much time on their hands. We'll talk about that and a lot more coming up.
All right, Scoot's headed your way. Have a great Thursday evening. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.